He's a busy person.
Right.
It says it's loading, that's what it is. There we go. And I'll give you a 5-minute warning when you...
My name's Elaine Ewan, and I'd like to acknowledge my collaborator Mona Sarfati, who is at, I'm from Jefferson, and Dr. Sarfati is also part of the National Colorectal Cancer Roundtable. No conflicts to disclose. So this presentation it's not so much statistical as our novel application is that we wanted to sort of put out there that colon cancer may be an ambulatory care or sensitive condition. And so I'm going to just talk a little bit in terms of the background about what these conditions are and sort of why you would even want to think about them. So the rationale behind these, and many of you may be already familiar with this, is that they're ambulatory care sensitive conditions are an inferential measure of quality of care on the ambulatory side. So the rationale is that poor ambulatory care may precipitate a hospitalization. Therefore, the quality of ambulatory care is related to the propensity of hospitalization. And higher hospitalization rates for these conditions could indicate quality of care problems. So this is, you know, these measurements have been around actually for a decade or more. But they're often used to focus attentions on aspects of ambulatory care that merit strengthening. Thus far, colon cancer has not been included in these. There are more things like diabetes, asthma, you know, the ones that you were talking about in terms of the disease management conditions. In terms of colorectal cancer, it's actually a leading cause of cancer mortality. And it's completely preventable in terms of progression of disease with proper screening. And if it is detected early, it dramatically improves prognosis. So there is sort of a rationale for including colorectal cancer as an ambulatory care sensitive condition. And it's, we sort of estimated, this is one of those back of the envelope things, but if, you know, nearly 50% of new colorectal cancer could be prevented if the screening rate were to increase to 70%. And we know from other data that the screening rate is nowhere close to that at this point, for many different reasons, sort of cultural preferences, people. Anyway, there's a whole story around why people may or may not elect to have a colonoscopy, which is the main way we screen in the United States. So what we hypothesized is that if we included colorectal cancer as this kind of measure, we could actually identify weaknesses in the continuum of care. We sort of thought about using this as more a policy, a way to identify populations at risk. The risk obviously starts in the ambulatory setting, and it may include sort of preferences for a colonoscopy as well as access to colonoscopy. So there's a few things that go into the story of why people don't get colonoscopy, which has to do with the continuum of care. You know, from a public health point of view, certainly patient preferences, but then also abilities to access care, and is the care actually there? So each link in this continuum may affect, the colorectal cancer incidence and mortality at local and national levels. So there's a practical application of this. I mean, this is actually a very practical thing that we're trying to do, and we actually have something out to the ACS that hopefully they'll like. So in terms of where we are right now with CRC, the HEDIS quality measure relies upon voluntary data collection. So what we thought in terms of using this ambulatory care sensitive condition measure, measure is that it actually relies on routinely collected hospital discharge data. So in terms of actually accessing, sort of getting a picture of what's happening for a large population, it, you know, often this hospital data is available rather than the HEDIS measures, which are more, you know, voluntary data collection. There is, in terms of the hospital discharge data, of course, a role of severity of illness. I'd like to actually acknowledge my colleague Dan Lewis, who has supported, you know, a lot of this conceptual work. So, severity of illness certainly controls for disease progression, morbidity, and complexity, and we need to acknowledge that hospitalization, in terms of appropriateness of hospitalization, may be, you know, appropriate at some severity stages, but not others. And it's actually a way of getting a clinical lens on, you know, these hospitalizations. You can't just say, you know, it's not appropriate. Some people may need it. So in this little study that I'm going to show you data on, we use disease staging to identify both our patient cohorts with colon cancer and also to identify the severity of illness stage. And of course, for CRC, severity is closely related to prognosis and resource use. So here's a little bit on disease staging. It's actually vendored by MedStat at this point, developed in the 1970s using ICD-9 codes present on hospital claims over 400 disease severity categories, sort of close to a sort of pattern after cancer staging. So, you know, stage one, no complications or minimal severity up to stage three with multiple site involvement. And I'll have a slide here. Well, you'll see later the actual stages for CRC. So what we did is we used data from the PHC-4, which is the Pennsylvania Healthcare Cost Containment data, which is a mandatory data set, it's mandatory for all hospitals to report their data. We used 2006 data. We looked at only the first hospitalization. We looked at rates using the 2000 census data to look at rates by county. We used some geographic information system, GSMI, look at variation between mountains and look at sort of variation by hospitals, you know, sort of who had more either CRC hospitalizations or high-grade hospitalizations. So here is the actual data, and you can see here is the stage distribution in terms of CRC. Sorry, there's a little typo on the top there, but you can see, you know, we had a wide distribution of CRC. You can see stage two, roughly, you know, a little less than half the substantial numbers of people progressing to stage three CRC, which is, as we sort of mentioned before, completely preventable. It's completely preventable with good screening procedures in place. We look variation by race. Actually, this is only the hospitalizations. These are not rates by race, but, you know, like of the people who got to the hospital, was there variation by race? No, is the answer. There was significant variation by gender in terms of their distribution by stage. So females were actually, this is what this is, identified earlier. Women may have better health-seeking behaviors. We know that. So, and then also by age, we can see that those older were identified earlier. There's, you know, in terms of the proportion who showed up at the hospital, there's more people older. Older people may have more supports in terms of, you know, sort of case, you know, screening, encouragement, things like that. Here's our insurance. dangerous. And we see that people in Medicare actually showed up earlier. That's sort of obviously connected with age. And that is, those differences are significant. So these are just our results. We looked at over 9,000 people over 18 years of age with a primary diagnosis of colon cancer. And a little under half were for later stages, stage 3, where the cancer had spread locally or metastasized to, you know, other sites. The younger age groups and the uninsured had the highest proportion of later stage hospitalization. So in terms of thinking about developing programmatic interventions, this is kind of, I know where Dr. Sarfati is going with this. We looked at, this is our adjusted rates by county. A little mountain range. Here's Pittsburgh here. So looking at stage 2, which is the earlier stage versus stage 3, we see a little variation. Some of these counties are in, more rural or underpopulated areas. And some didn't have any, very few cases. So, in our proposal, we're going to look at a finer level of geography, because it's actually some of Nancy Krieger's work shows that, you'd actually want to look at, a census tract or other levels, because that's where actual variation by socioeconomic status happens in terms of on the patient side. And this is actually, this is a little hard to disentangle. I didn't have time to make a new map for this, but we looked at where people were actually hospitalized. So each of these, so this is our, the rates, and this is from EPQMS, which is right on the Pennsylvania Department of Health website. But these are, in terms of the brown, this is where there's higher rates of CRC. And each dot is a hospital. So we looked at this in two ways. We looked at where are the hospitals with high numbers of colon cancer cases, which are the yellow dots. Ideally, this would be two maps. And the other, the red dots are where are the hospitals where there's high proportions of stage 3 colon cancer cases, which are the ones that were more preventable. So we looked at it in both ways, and the intention of this wasn't just to make a nice map and everything, but the intention was actually to identify locations and resources where there might be physicians, outpatient services, where education and outreach around CRC screening could happen. So, sort of taking our descriptive and research findings and taking them to the ground to have actual change and education on the ground. So we really believe that our geographic analyses provide stakeholders, not only in the provider community, but also possibly in the general population, with visually informative analyses, and hopefully that they would identify populations and areas where there could be intervention either through programs or education. We did observe wide variation in age, gender adjusted rates, and we also observed high rates of later stage hospitalizations in areas where there were few hospital resources. So certainly identifying gaps in terms of, I don't know if you want to think about supply and demand or anything like that, but gaps in terms of what resources are there and what's happening medically to the general population. So certainly these geographic and hospital-based analyses identify targets for community planning and policy development. And as I mentioned before, hospitals with high volumes of these cases may be in collaborate with the local cancer consortium in Pennsylvania, perhaps we need to help roll some of this stuff out, because certainly, you know, finding out something is just the first step, and to actually affect change on the ground is, takes all of these links. So I'd like to thank everyone, and thank you for your attention.
You. We have 15 minutes for questions. We have one ready. Go ahead.
I have a question for Dr. Yue. I'm from a medical school in internal medicine. So we have some practice improvement module. One of them is the cancer screening. So we ask questions about rectal cancer screening. But I noticed that as you set the age with like 18 to 44, then 45 to 64, then 65.
Right. Sort of, yeah.
But do you follow the guideline for colorectal cancer screening? I'm not a physician, but if I recall correctly, colorectal cancer screening is only recommended for patients age 50 and older, or for some specific race or ethnicity group with younger, also with family history.
Right.
So in your data, you report the rate when they were diagnosed at early stage or late stage. Of course, for like patients
they have
routine screening. They, I guess.
Well, that's they have recommended routine screening.
But for younger patients, if I want a colorectal cancer screening without any symptom, even my insurance won't cover. So this is a question whether it's like cost effectiveness. Inevitably, everything related with the cost, with the health care expense already high. Is cost effectiveness wise it's reasonable for like having a younger patient? Younger population patients have routine cancer, colorectal cancer screening. You didn't report, you reported when proportion among patients have the cancer. What's the rate when they were diagnosed?
Well,
what's the prevalence of
we did do, I didn't show, we did do, you know, age-adjusted rates. And of course, the prevalence is greater in those over 50, and certainly in terms of, you know, sort of using this kind of data to identify populations to intervene. Of course, we follow the guidelines. But I mean, CRC does occur in people who are younger. And I mean, in terms of prioritizing program initiation, or, you know, they would probably, you know, follow the guidelines, not prioritize for younger populations initially. So I mean, that's just where the science is. But I mean, what we're finding is, I mean, it's actually interesting, I thought, with your insurance data, because again, it's slightly different. A lot of research has been done with Medicare data, which is the over 65 population. So if you look, you know, that's where all the top disease management categories came from.
Yeah.
So when you go to look at a younger population, you know, it's not surprising.
Let's move on to other questions. Are there some others for the speakers?
A GI-related question, actually, too. Is your model sensitive enough to look at fecal occult blood testing as an entry point? And secondly, my specialty area is GI, and one of the big issues that the specialty societies are dealing with is access gaps. And the number of colonoscopists available to do the screening effectively and within the focused time frame, are some of those counties in Pennsylvania potentially counties that nurse practitioners or internists are doing the screenings and there's a higher miss rate, so therefore we have a confounded between screen rate and CA rate?
Yeah, I mean, that's actually what we need to find out from like PAC-3, because PAC-3 is, you know, Pennsylvania is, you know, sort of the cancer consortium of providers. So, I mean, I think what you bring up is a really interesting thing. I mean, I know Dr. Sarfati had done a survey, you know, survey of like FOBT and sigmoidoscopy, you know, other screening modalities. I mean, what I'm reporting here is limited to colonoscopy because that's what, you know, you could collect from the administrative data. But, yeah, sort of a data triangulation problem.
Is that data available? The distribution of specialists and
yes.
Yeah, that's that's available.
Could be put together.
We talked about looking at the AMA files and sort of crosswalking them in a couple different ways.
Actually, MedStat has a better database. Physician level identifiers that you can match the physician supply with the disease burden.
Good. Other questions? Yes. Who's back here? Had a couple questions. Yes, go ahead. I'm sorry, in the back here. Yeah. You. You.
Sorry. Market scan databases. How do you identify the individual
physicians?
Is there a geocode?
You could use it that way. The way I've used it in the past is I basically hand them a set of zip codes. They hand back to me individual physician data by specialty, FP status for that set of zips. That's how we do disease modeling for the clinic, is looking at that level of physician capacity.
So Thomson Reuters does the analysis.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, we're hoping to look at the census CT level, the census tract level.
But you have to sort of walk through all the
confidentiality.
Okay, the second to the last row here.
My question to the first presenter, I'm interested if you try other matching methods, such as the probability score, and if you have, and how different are the results?
It has a stage, it's a little bit of a variable.
I had a question about the number of variables. It's an astounding number to work with.
How do we get them all?
Well, a couple questions, yes. So where do they all, why did you choose more than 400? Were they just all there and you just threw everything into the pot you had?
No, I was going to talk about this. Zandler can help with the things that I don't cover well. But basically, first of all, is there are multiple sources. There's hospitalization, there's medication, certain medications can indicate certain conditions affecting the home health care. So the indicators come from these different sources. And many of them contain their split. Hospitalization per condition is different from just getting the medication for it. So the same condition may show up.
But did you have a weighting factor or some criteria that you used to select among the, were there potentially 1,000 and you chose 400?
No, this guy generated them all, gave them to me.
Well, I mean, I think that the idea, unless you were selling about finding Diane and this methodology, if you look at conceptual, conditions that are picked, and in the traditional regression approach, you can't deal with that. The boosted regression tree was able to deal with it and said, yeah, even something that's not all that relevant in the population may be very important.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you
very much. Feel free to hang around and talk some more, but session's over. Thanks. Thanks for your help here.
Yeah,
sure.
Right.
that division is no concern. Oh, injury, I hope to start the injury program in Arkansas.
Oh, okay.
I'm still in Warlock, but I've been the last 5 years working for the school district. Yeah, I retired and didn't work, so this job came up.
About not having the I'm sure,
and I could